Gimel Amar Aleph at the Mishnah at the top of the page. So the Mishnah says, Hamafkin Mos Eitzel Shulchani. Let's say a guy goes ahead and deposits money by a money changer. In Sarurin Lo Yishtamish Bahen, Lefichach Imavdu Eno Chayav Ba'achara Yusan, Mutarin Yishtamish Bahen, Lefichach Imavdu Chayav Ba'achara Yusan. Basically depends on how you deposit the money. If the money is tied up in a bundle, that's an indication that you don't want the money changer to actually touch the money, you just want him to watch it. Therefore, if the money gets lost, the money changer is not responsible because he was never meant to touch the money in the first place. However, if you gave the money to him unbound or untied, so the indication was that he's allowed to use the money, and therefore, if the money gets lost, the shulchani, the money changer, is going to be responsible to pay compensation. However, Eitzel Balabayis, Bein Serurin Uvein Mutarin Lo Yishtamish Bahen, Lefichach Imavdu Eino Chayav Ba'achara Yusan, if you deposited money by a regular guy, a regular Balabayis, he wasn't a money changer, so then it doesn't make a difference whether the money was tied or untied, bound or unbound, makes no difference. The assumption is the Balabayis is never allowed to use that money, he's just a shomer, and therefore, if the money gets lost, the Balabayis is not responsible. Then the Mishnah ends with the Machlokes, Chenvani ke Balabayis divi Reb Meir, Reb Yehuda Omer Chenvani ke Shulchani. There's a Machlokes between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda regarding the status of a shopkeeper. If you deposit money by a shopkeeper to watch, is he considered more like a money changer? That's Reb Meir's position. Or is he more like a regular, that's Reb Yehuda's position. And Reb Meir thinks that he's like a Balabayis. Again, that's going to have ramifications as to whether he's allowed to use the money and whether he's going to be chayev if the money ever gets lost. Okay, so asks the Gemara, Mishum did Sarurin Lo Yishtamish Bahen. Why is the fact that the money is bound together, why does that mean that the Shulchani is not allowed to use it? Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yehuda, but Sarurin Vachasumin Shanu. So the Gemara adds one factor. It's not just that the money is bound. Most of the time, if you're handing money to someone to watch, the money's going to be bound together. It's not just going to be loose bills, but rather the reason or the thing that's making the money untouchable for the money changer is also the fact that there's a seal on the money. You sealed it shut, which is an indication that you don't want anyone opening or touching the money. Rav Mari Amar Bekesher Mishuna, Ika Da'amre Bay Rav Mari Kesher Mishuna Mai Teku. The Gemara quotes two versions regarding the status of a Kesher Mishuna. In the first version, the Gemara says that if you make like some kind of a abnormal knot around the money, that's an indication that you don't want the Shulchani touching the money. In the second version, the Gemara raises it as a Shaila and is unsure whether a Kesher Mishuna, whether an abnormal knot, is considered enough of a deterrent to tell the Shulchani not to open up the money. Okay, then we said, Mutarin Yishtamish Bahen, Amar Ravuna, Va'afilu Rav Huna qualifies and says that we mentioned that if you hand the money to the money changer when it's unbound, when it's untied, so then he's going to be chayev if the money gets lost. Rav Huna says not only is the money changer chayev to compensate you if he loses the money if it was unbound, but even if an onus occurs, even if some kind of a freak accident happens that causes the money to get destroyed, let's say a fire breaks out and the money gets burnt to a crisp, so Rav Huna says even there the shulchani is chayev if the money was untied. So asks the Gemara v'ha'avdu katani, but that's not what it says in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says the shulchani is only chayev if the money gets lost, not if an onus occurs. So the Gemara says, no, Kinder Rabba, De Amar Rabba, Nignevu Belistin Mezuyan, Avdu Shetava Sfinaso Bayam. The Gemara makes reference to a statement of Rabba that we cited back in the second paragraph, back on Daf Chavtes, where Rabba told us that in certain contexts, the word Nignevu and Avdu, even though usually we translate those as being stolen or lost, sometimes it can also refer to scenarios of onus. For example, Nignevu can mean that an item was stolen by armed robbers, or Avdu can mean that a boat capsized at sea. So those are obviously onus scenarios with the words Nignivu and Avdu. So just because the Mishnah used the word Avdu, it doesn't necessarily mean that the Shulchani is only Chayiv if the money gets lost. He can even be Chayiv if an onus occurs. Again, that's Rav Huna's position. For Rav Nachman Amar Nensulo, and Rav Nachman disagrees. Rav Nachman says, no, that we take the Mishnah literally, that the Shulchani is only going to be held liable for the money that was untied. In other words, if it was lost. If an onus occurred, Rav Nachman says that the Shulchani is not Chayiv. So asks the Gemara, Amar Le Ravala Rav Nachman, Lididachta Amar Nensulo, Alma Lohavi, Shoel Alayhu, Ishoel Lohave, Shomer Sacher Nami Lohave. So Rava questions Rav Nachman's entire premise and entire understanding of the Mishnah. You, Rav Nachman, just told us that the Shulchani, the money changer, is not Chayav if an onus occurs. He's only Chayav if the money gets lost in a scenario where the money was untied. The problem is, asks Rava, that, in other words, according to your logic, Rav Nachman, the money changer should not even be Chayav if the money is lost. Why not? Because if you're telling me that the money changer is not Chayav for onus, ones, then obviously he's not a shoel, right? Because we know that a shoel, of course, is chayav for ones. Now, if you're going to tell me that he's not a shoel, well, then by that logic, he's also not going to be a shomer sachar. Why is he not going to be a shomer sachar? Because the standards, although it's true that a shoel is chayav for something more, his degree of liability is greater, but essentially, fundamentally, the standards are similar. So if he's not going to, in other words, if we're not treating him like a shoel, so then presumably we're not treating him like a shomer sachar either. If we're not treating him like a shomer sachar, so then why is the money changer even chayav if the money gets lost? In other words, if he's like a shomer chinam, he should even be putter on that. A shomer chinam, as we know, is only chayav for pshia, for negligence. He's not chayav for geneva va'aveda. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Amar lei, b'hamo dina lecha, d'hoil v'nene mahane, b'hahu hanadi misurami le'zevina de'izbe ravcha zavan behu, havei alayu shomer sachar. The Gemara explains that the reason why we view the shulchani, the money changer, as a shomer sachar, as opposed to a shomer chinam, is because he gets benefit from the fact that he has your money lying around. Let's say a person approaches him with a potential business transaction, and he needs to have some money accessible in order to get this business transaction off the ground. Having your money there is going to accrue benefit to him, because now he's able to engage in this transaction, which he would not have otherwise been able to do if not for your money. Therefore, we treat him like a shomer sachar, and that's why he's going to be chayav for avida if in fact the money gets lost. Okay, so asks the Gemara, Isi ve'rav Nachman le'ravuna ha'mafkin ma'os etzel shulchani in tzerurin lo yishtamish bahen lefichach im hotzi lo ma'al ha'gizbar v'im mutarin yishtamish bahen lefichach im hotzi ma'al ha'gizbar. The Gemara quotes a Mishnah in Meseches Me'ila that looks very similar to our Mishnah, but it's referring, instead of a normal person depositing money by the money changer, it's the Gizbar of Hektish, the treasurer of Hektish, who deposits money by the by a money changer. And the Mishnah makes basically the same exact distinction that it makes in our Mishnah, which is that if the money is tied together, you're not allowed to use it. In other words, the Shulchani is not allowed to use that money. And therefore, if in fact the Shulchani went ahead and used the money that was tied up, that's not the Gizbar's fault, that's the Shulchani's fault. In other words, he wasn't supposed to use the money that was tied together. If the Shulchani used that money, so then he's the one who violates Me'ila and not the Gizbar, not the treasurer. If the money was untied, so then we said if the money changer spends the money and he uses it, so then the Gizbar is going to be the one in violation of Me'ila and not the Shulchani. What's the problem with this Mishnah? The E Amar Afilu Nensu My Iria Hotzi Afilu Lo Hotzi Nami. If you're going to argue like Rav Huna did that the Shulchani is even chayav for ones, that the Mishnah didn't really just mean that he's only chayav if the money gets lost, but he's even chayav for ones, so then why does the Mishnah in Me'ila make this distinction based on whether the Shulchani spends the money that the Gizbar deposited? Even if he never spends the money, the Gizbar should still be in violation of Me'ila. Basically, the moment that the Gizbar deposits unbound and untied money in the possession of the money changer, he should right away be in violation of Me'ila, regardless of whether the Shulchani ended up spending the money. That factor doesn't seem to play in, according to Rav Huna, who says that you're going to be chaya for ones. So the Gemara says, you're right. Amar le hu hadin afal gav delo hotzi va'aydei desana resha hotzi tanasifa nami hotzi. The Gemara says, you're right, that in reality, even if the Shulchani never spent the money, the Gizbar would still be in violation of Me'ila. The only reason why the Mishnah in Me'ila uses the language of Hotzi, which means that the Shulchani spends the money, was simply to parallel the language that appeared in the Risha, in the first clause of the Mishnah in Me'ila. Okay, says the Mishnah. Hashaleach yad b'fikadon.
Rabbi, yes, I thought to be chayav for Me'ila, you have to have some benefit from the object. Is that incorrect?
Well,
because benefit that yeah. The Gizbar can't.
Well, that's a good question. That's part of a much more complicated sugya about how exactly to understand the nature of the prohibition of Me'ila. These are Gemaras that appear in Maseches Me'ila, Maseches Kiddushin. The Gemara discusses this in various different contexts about, you know, if I appoint you as a shliach, right, and you end up violating Me'ila on my behalf, the question becomes who really is the one who's deriving benefit here. You have to kind of look at Me'ila as kind of a broader picture. It's not just about the technical question of which party is deriving immediate benefit. It may have some long-term effects. It may have, you know, downstream effects to the mishaleach, to the shliach. So that's really more of a topic that appears in Me'ila and Kiddushin. But the bottom line is that in this particular instance, the Gemara's conclusion is that the Gizbar does in fact violate Me'ila simply by depositing unbound money by the Shulchani, by the money changer. Because again, that would seem to fall in line with the way that our Mishnah reads in the context of a regular person who deposits money by the Shulchani. Okay, says the Mishnah.
The only benefit I could come up with is that he's no longer responsible for watching.
Well, that's possible also, is that he's, exactly. He's pushing off the responsibility to the other party to watch, yeah. Okay, so the Mishnah says the following: Hashaleach yad b'fikadon beis shamay omrim yilke b'chaser uviyaser uveis hillel omrim kishaso tza'a Rabbi Akiva omer kishasa tivya. The Mishnah quotes a three-way machlokas regarding what happens if the shomer goes ahead and violates shlichus yad. We've been discussing shlichus yad constantly over the last week. Again, it's the idea that if a shomer goes ahead and essentially violates the terms of his shlichus, he goes ahead and uses an item that he wasn't supposed to use. Let's say in the case of a shomer chinam or a shomer sachar, neither of them have the right to use the item. They're only meant to watch it. So if you go ahead and you do shlichus yad, the question is, how much are you supposed to pay? What, in other words, how do you assess the damages that occur from shlichus yad? So Beis Shammai uses very cryptic language. They say yilke bechaser uviyaser, that they're penalized with the decreases and the increases. Again, the Gemara will explain this, but the basic idea is that according to Beis Shammai, at least you're going to have to pay whatever the highest valuation of the item is, whether it's the valuation at the time that you took the item, the time that you stole it, the time that you damaged it, whatever the highest valuation is. That's what you're going to pay. Beis Hillel also has a very cryptic language where he says you pay kishas hotza'a, which literally means the value of the deposit at the time that it was removed. Again, the Gemara is going to explain what that means. And then Rabbi Akiva is a third shita, which says that you pay kishas ativia, whatever the value of the deposit was at the time of the claim. So the Gemara explains. Amar Rava, Haiman de gazal chavisa de chamra mechavre, meikara shavya zuza, hashta shavya arba, tavra ushasye mishalim arba, Itvar Memela Mishalim Zuza. The Gemara has the following case. The Gemara says, let's say Reuven stole a barrel of wine from Shimon. The barrel of wine was initially worth one zuz, and now the barrel of wine, the price of wine increased, now it's worth four zuz. So the Gemara explains the following. If Reuven went ahead and either shattered the barrel or he drank the wine in the barrel, then he pays the current market value, which is four zuz. However, if the barrel broke on its own, Reuven only pays the original value of one zuz. So the Gemara explains. Mai Taima, Kevan Deisa Ha. If the barrel were still intact, he would simply return the barrel back to the owner. So now, when Reuven breaks the barrel or drinks the wine from the barrel, he is effectively stealing it now, because 5 seconds ago, the barrel was here and intact. He could have just returned it back to Shimon. So now, he's effectively stealing it. We discuss this back at the end of Maseches Bava Kamma, where the Mishnah tells us that a gazlan always has to pay the value of the item at the time that it was stolen. Okay, so then the Gemara says, "It var memeila mishalim zuza maitaima." So then what about the corollary of this? What about the fact that the Gemara told us that if the barrel breaks on its own, that Reuven can suffice with only paying the one zuz? Why is that the case? So the Gemara says, "Hashtelo avidla vilo midi amai kamechayavle ahahi shaita de gazla ahahi shaita zuza hu deshafi." Because he didn't do anything; the barrel broke on its own, and therefore his degree of liability is going to be limited to whatever the value of the barrel was at the time that he stole it, which was a mere one zuz. Okay, then the Gemara said, "Tanah Beis Hillel omrim kishas hotza, my kishas hotza." What did Beis Hillel mean when he said that you pay according to the value of the item at the time of removal? Ilema kishas hotza min ha'ulam. If Beis Hillel meant at the time that the barrel of wine was removed from the world, which is another way of saying the barrel was broken or the wine was drunk. In other words, the deposit was essentially destroyed. The problem is, the Gemara says, "Uvemai I bechaser mi'ika lemanda amar v'hatanan kol ha'gazlanim eshalman kishas ha'gezela." The Ebeser Hainu Beis Shammai. If you're going to tell me that Beis Hillel's statement is a reference to the case where Reuven either drunk the wine or broke the barrel, so then, well, what? In other words, what exactly is the case here? If the barrel decreased in value, so then there's no way that anyone is going to tell you that Reuven the Goslin can suffice with paying the lower valuation. We just established a second ago from the Mishnah at the end of Bava Kamma that Kol HaGazlan and Mishalman Kishas HaGazela, that a Goslin always has to pay the value of the time of the Gazela. No one's going to say that he can get away with paying the lower valuation. And if it's a scenario where the value of the deposit increased, so then this shita is the same as Beis Shammai. The Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai are not having a machlokas. Beis Shammai was the one who told us that you always pay the higher valuation. So what exactly did Beis Hillel mean when he said that you pay kishas hotza'a? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela pshita kishas hotza'a mi beis bailin. Beis Hillel must have meant that you pay according to the value of the item when it was removed from the owner's domain. In other words, at the time it was stolen or the time it was misappropriated in the case of Mi'ila. So the problem is, asks the Gemara, Lema Rabba de Amar Kibbe Shammai. We're now pigeonholing Rabba's position to that of Beis Shammai, which we often don't like to do. Usually the Gemara tries to avoid taking a shita of an Amora and attributing it to Beis Shammai, because that makes that shita shelo kahalacha. So the Gemara says, no. Amar lecha Rabba, b'yeser kule amalo plige, ki plige b'chaser, Beis Shammai savre shlichus yad, eina tzricha chisaron, v'chichaser b'reshusa didei chaser, uveis hillel savre shlichus yad. that shmicha chisaron vechichaser bereshusa demari chaser. The Gemara says like this: everyone agrees that when the value of the deposit or the barrel of wine increases, so then everyone agrees that the gazan is going to pay the higher valuation. There's no machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The machlokas is what if the value of the barrel decreases? So how do you assess the damages based on shlichus yad in that case? So this goes back to a machlokas we discussed earlier in the week, which is whether shlichus yad requires a chisaron in order to violate shlichus yad as a shomer. Does there need to be a loss or a decrease in value of the item? So Beis Shammai say no. They say you can violate shlichus yad even without a chisaron, which means that when the value of the barrel of the deposit decreases, it was doing so in your own domain, in Reuven the Goslin's domain. He already violated shlichus yad. The shomer already took the item, even though there was no loss at the time that he took the barrel. It doesn't matter. He was already in violation of shlichus yad. And now that the barrel is going down in value, that loss accrued in his domain. And now the shomer is responsible to compensate the owner for the value of that loss. And Beis Hillel disagrees.
You're making an opposite argument.
Yeah, the what?
The barrel returns it to the owner, but it went up four times.
So the Gemara already told us a second ago that in the case of the barrel going up, everyone agrees. In other words, Beis Hillel and Shammai agree in that case that that the Gazan is certainly going to pay the higher valuation. The
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that if he returns the barrel intact to the owner, but it went up in value.
Oh, that's a separate question.
More money?
Correct. Well, that was the case the Gemara mentioned on the bottom of the previous sermon, right? The Gemara said that if the barrel is intact, they could theoretically just return it. So now, when he breaks the barrel or drinks the wine, he's basically a goslin, right? Because in theory, he could just return the barrel the way that it was if, in fact, it was still intact. But again, if the value of the barrel went down, so Beis Hillel is going to disagree and say, no, that in order for the shomer to violate shlichus yad, there needs to be a financial loss. If at the time that he took the barrel or he misappropriated the barrel, he used it when he wasn't supposed to, there was no loss to the barrel. The barrel was still worth the same. So that's not called shlichus yad. Only once the barrel starts to depreciate in value do we say that now there's a violation of shlichus yad, which means that Beis Hillel will say that the goslin can get away with paying the lower valuation. Why? Because the decrease occurred while the barrel was still in the possession of the original owner. So the Gemara tries again. Elahada amar Rava, shlichus yad, ena tzricha chisaron, lema Rava da amar kevei Shammai. So now we have a very similar problem to what we had in the Gemara before. Because as we already discussed earlier this week, back at Daf Mem Aleph, we had a running machlokes about this very issue. And the problem is that Rava seems to be taking the side that shlichus yad does not require a chisaron, which again seems to put him in the camp of Beis Shammai, which again we don't like to do. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elahacha b'mayaskinan, kigon shetiltila lahavi aleha gozalos. So the Gemara again circles back to a machlokas that we quoted 2 days ago back on Daf Mem Aleph about the case where the shomer decided to carry the barrel, not because he wanted to use the barrel per se, he wanted to use it as a step tool, as a ladder, to go get some birds from the bird's nest. So we quoted this machlokas already 2 days ago about what's called a shoel shalomidas. He obviously did not have the owner's consent to do that. The question is, does that make him a goslin, or is he still considered a shoel? So Beis Shammai say that he's a goslin, he's considered to be a goslin, and therefore any depreciation in the value of the barrel occur in his domain, and therefore he is responsible to pay the higher valuation. And Beis Hillel disagree and say, nope, that he's still considered to be a shoel, and therefore any depreciation in the value of the barrel is going to occur in the domain of the original owner. So again, the Gemara asks, Ela hada amar Rava, shoel shalomidas lirabanan goslin have. We're still stuck in the same rut, the same issue here, which is that according to Rava's version of the Rabbanan, if you think that a shoel shalomidas, that a person who borrows without consent of the owner, is considered to be a goslin, so once again, Rava is in the camp of Beis Shammai, that he's a goslin. Again, we don't like to do that. So the Gemara says, you're right. Elahacha b'shevach shel gezela kamiflege. Beis Shammai savri shevach gezela de nigzal have. Uveis Hillel savri shevach gezela de goslin have. Uveflukta dahani tanai disanya hagozales harachel gzazach vialda mishali mosach vias gizoseha vias vias valdoseha diver Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda Omer gizela choseres veineha dekonami dekatani v'shamay omrim yilke v'chaser uviaser uveisel omrim kishas hotzah shmamina. The Gemara, the final point in the Gemara is to suggest the following, which is that the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is regarding what's called shvach gizela, shevach gizela, when there is an increase in the the value of the item after it's been stolen, who is entitled to that increase? Is it the gazlan or is it the nigzal? So Beis Shammai say that any increase in value to the stolen item belongs to the nigzal. He, after all, is the original owner. And Beis Hillel disagree. This machlokas, the Gemara explains, revolves around an earlier machlokas between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda regarding the following case. Let's say Reuven goes ahead and steals an animal from Shimon. He steals his lamb, his sheep, whatever it is. And he goes ahead and either he shears the sheep, or the sheep or the animal gives birth. So now the issue is, in other words, the question is, does Reuven the Gazlan have to compensate Shimon for the value of the fleece, the shearings, the offspring, whatever the case may be? So that's a machlokas. According to Rebbe Meir, the Gazlan is fully liable to pay for everything, which is basically Beis Shammai Shita. He had, in other words, everything belongs to the Nigzal. The animal, the offsprings, the shearings, everything goes to the Nigzal. And Beis Hillel / Rebbe Yehuda disagree. Rebbe Yehuda says, no, you just return the animal. That's it. Anything that came off the animal, any fleece, any wool, any offspring, whatever, that belongs to the gazlan. And in fact, the Gemara says, if you look carefully at the Lashon of the Mishnah, it seems to bear this out as well, because Beis Shammai, when they talk about penalizing the gazlan or the shomer, they just say, yilke b'chaser uviyaser. We're going to penalize them with increases and decreases. But increases and decreases, you know, the words, it's very, very vague. It's not specific. So the way the Gemara is interpreting this expression of Beis Shammai, it just means, in other words, it's not referring to an increase or a decrease in value of the item, but in terms of the Shevach Gezela, an increase and a decrease in the item in general, because it used to have fleece and now it doesn't. It used to be pregnant and now it's no longer pregnant. So the Gemara says that's the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, which really circles all the way back to a machlokas between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda. Okay, then we said Rabbi Akiva Omer Kishas HaTavir. The third Shita in the Mishnah was Rabbi Akiva, who said that you pay according to the time of the claim. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halacha K'Rabbi Akiva. That's what we pass. We pass in that you pay the value of the deposit at the time that the owner comes back and claims and demands his item back. However, the Gemara says, "Umode Rabbi Akiva b'makum she'ei shedim." Rabbi Akiva will concede that if there are edim who can attest to the value of the item at the time that it was stolen, then you're going to pay kishas agazila based on the original value at the time the item was stolen. My taima de amar kra la asher hu lo yitenedu biyom ashmaso vechevan de ika edim mehahu shaitahu de ichayav leashma, because the pasuk at the end of Parshas Vayikra says la asher hu lo yitenedu biyom ashmaso, that which is his is going to be given to him on the day of his guilt, and since there are edim, the guilt was already established at the moment that he stole the item, and therefore you pay kishas hagizela. Amar le Rav Oshiel Rav Yehuda, Rebbe Ata Omer Kain, Hachi Amar Rabbi Asi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Chaluk Haya Rabbi Akiva Afilu B'makom Sheyesh Edim. My Taima Da Amar Kra La Asher Hu Lo Yitenenu Biyom Ashmaso Uveidino Hu Da Kamechayvei Le Ashma. So Rav Oshia pushed back on Rav Yehuda and said, "Is this really true? Is this really what Rav Yehuda said? What Rabbi Akiva said, that in a scenario where there are edim that you pay kishasa gizela?" But Rabbi Akiva disagreed. Even in that case, even when there are edim present who can testify to the value of the item at the time it was stolen, even there, Rabbi Akiva says that you're going to pay whatever the current value of the item is. How do we know that? Because the Gemara quotes the same pasuk, La Asher Hu Lo Yitenenu Biyom Ashmaso. According to this version of the Gemara, the way Rabbi Akiva reads that pasuk is that only Bezdin can implicate you on the day of your guilt, but edim, mere witnesses, cannot do that. If it's only the edim who are testifying to the value of the item at the time of a gezela, that is insufficient to hold you liable for the original value of the item. So Amar le Rav Zira le Rabbi Abba bar Papa ki azlas lahasam akif asulama ditzur v'ul legavei de Rabbi Yaakov bar Idi uvay minei ishmiyale le Rabbi Yochanan halacha ke Rabbi Akiva o ein halacha ke Rabbi Akiva. Amar le hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan halacha ke Rabbi Akiva liolam. The Gemara relates that Rabbi Zira said to Rabbi Abba, when you go up to Eretz Yisrael, he said, don't go directly to Eretz Yisrael. Take the long way there. Go through what's called sulama ditzur. Literally, that's the ladder of Tyre. It's like an area in a southern Lebanon, and go there first, and go to Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, and ask him the Shaila, ask him whether we pass like Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Yaakov said, yeah, we pass like Rabbi Akiva liolam. What does that mean? My liolam? Amar Rav Ashi, shelo tomar, hani mile hecha deleka edim, aval hecha deika edim lo. So one possibility is that don't think that the qualification that we mentioned a moment ago is correct, but rather Rabbi Akiva's position is that you always pay based on the current value of the item at the time of the claim, regardless of whether there are edim. That distinction is incorrect. That's one way to understand Rabbi Yaakov's carte blanche statement that we pass like Rabbi Akiva li olam. V'inami da ahadra leduchta v'itavra le'afuke mi de Rabbi Rabbi Yishmael de Amar lo ba'ina das bailim kamash malon de ba'ina das bailim. Alternatively, the usage of the word li'olam is to highlight the fact that we paskin against Rabbi Yishmael. This is also a machlokas that we alluded to briefly a few days ago, and it's really a sugya that appears at the very end of Bava Kama, a machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva as to whether we require das bailim. In other words, again, this is the case that we mentioned a few days ago. If you steal an item from someone, do you need to inform the owner when you return the item in order to no longer be liable for any future damages? That's the position of Rabbi Akiva, that you must inform the owner. And Rabbi Yishmael disagrees. He says, no, as long as you put the item back to the place where you stole it from, you don't have to tell him that the item was even stolen in the first place. So the case here is that the person took the item and he put it right back to the place where he took it from. So according to Rabbi Yishmael, you're fine, you're good to go. But the Gemara says, no, we pass like Rabbi Akiva li'olam. Even in this scenario, we pass like Rabbi Akiva that you require das ba'olam, you have to inform the owner that you originally stole the item. The Rava Amar halacha k'beis Hillel, and Rava says that we passing like Beis Hillel, like that middle shita in the Mishnah, which says that basically that you're going to pay kishas hotzah at the value of the item when you took it out of the owner's house. And finally, the Mishnah says hachoshev lishloach yad b'fikadon beis shamay omrim chayav uveis Hillel omrim enu chayav ad sheyishaleach bo yad shene emar im lo shalach yado b'mleches rei ehu. There's a machlokas beis shamay beis Hillel in the Mishnah about whether a person violates shlichus yad with machshava alone. Right? Typically, in order for most areas of halacha to go into effect, typically machshava by itself is insufficient. That, in fact, is Beis Hillel's position. He says that you can only violate shlichus yad if you actually stick your hands out and use the item that you were just supposed to be watching. But Beis Shammai disagree. They say, no, that simply thinking about using the item is already enough to hold you liable for violating shlichus yad. Then the Mishnah says, hita es hachavis v'natal himena revias v'nishbara eno mishalim elo revias higbia v'natal himena revias v'nishbara mishalim demei kula. If the shomer tilted a barrel and off the barrel slid a revius of wine, oil, whatever it was, and the barrel and the oil or wine broke, so then the shomer is only liable to pay for the value of that oil or wine that slipped off the barrel. But if he first picked up the barrel and then tilted it and then the wine or oil fell off and broke, then he has to pay the value of the barrel as well because he acquired the barrel and at the same time he violated shlichus yad.